We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Welcome into the 5 o'clock hour of this Friday edition of Sports Talk, and today it is the final hour. We got pregame coverage of LSU baseball at Tennessee coming up at 6, first pitch 6:30, WWLAMFM.com, and of course the free Odyssey app. This hour, going to get into a little Pelicans talk this first segment. Obviously, the team fighting for that 6th seed in the Western Conference had a big bombs away game yesterday. Everybody was just making those three-pointers.
Yeah, when the Pelicans are good, it's usually because they make threes, and when they're bad, it's usually because they don't make threes. But you know, it's kind of fascinating. So they have the Warriors and the Lakers left on the schedule, and in a different universe, you know, you get to the final two games of the season, and like if someone's locked into a seed or they're eliminated already, and they're gonna sit their players or whatever. Especially with two veteran teams, right? You got these two old head teams, the Lakers and the Warriors. Well, that's not gonna happen. Because if you look at the Western Conference standings, Sacramento Kings, who the Pelicans have beaten five times this season, it's like the first time in 60-something years that a team has gone 5-0 against another team, and that's because they played in the play-in tournament. So they actually, typically, you'd only play a team four times. They played them five times, beat them all five times. So the Kings, who are 45-35, who are a game or two games out of the seventh spot to miss the or to be the top play-in team, instead, they've lost five games to the Pelicans. That's like a, you know, like 20% of their wins. Either way,
we reign over the Kings.
So Kings 45-35, Warriors the 9 seed 45-35, Lakers the 10 seed 45-35. So the difference between the 10 and the 8 is whoever what they do over these final two games,
right?
And that's a big difference when you're talking about the play-in tournament, right? It's the difference between having to win one game or two games. If you end up in that 9-10 game, then you got to go beat the loser of the 7-8. So if you're the 8 seed, you could theoretically play one game, win it, and you're in. And that's significant. And then you would get the home game if you lose that game to whoever is in the 7th spot. Now, the Pelicans have a one-game lead over the Suns right now, but they would lose the tiebreaker. So if they end up tied, the Suns hop ahead of them.
Boo.
So, you know, these next two games, it's going to be interesting.
Tonight, go Sacramento.
Go Sacramento. You know, boo Lakers, right? Boo Suns. And it's just funny because if you lose to the Warriors or the Lakers, you might end up playing the Warriors or the Lakers in the play-in because you lost to the Warriors or the Lakers. So these next two games are big. These are playoff games.
Yeah, for sure. Last night, like I was saying, bombs away. It was from everybody hitting from three-point range. C.J. McCollum hit 9 on the night. Here's what Zion Williamson had to say about C.J. after the game.
C.J. has been a really important piece of this team all year long. I remember at the beginning of the year, I kind of went to him and was like, look, I'm not where I need to be. And, you know, he was honest with me. He said, you do what you got to do, and he'll kind of pick up the weight for me. I mean, a teammate like that, you can't speak highly enough about him. He's a good dude on and off the court, and, you know, he's been playing at a really high level this year. And honestly, I'm just glad to have a dude like that around.
You know, I feel like a lot of folks have been giving C.J. McCollum some, you know, I guess you could call it that, but he's been really performing huge down the stretch for this team.
Mr. McCollum?
McCollum, yes.
Yeah, I mean, C.J. is just he is a professional scorer of a basketball. You know, like no one's ever gonna put him on Mount Rushmore of defensive two guards. But he's just a guy who can make baskets at times when you need a guy to make baskets, and that's why, you know, I'd like to see him in a playoff series. I'd like to see him get a chance to be that shot maker. It's tough because you don't know what to expect out of Brandon Ingram, right? And you don't know when he's gonna be ready. And one of the reasons I hope they miss the play-in tournament entirely and just get to go to a playoff series.
More rest.
So you can get a couple extra days to hopefully get Brandon Ingram on the court.
Now, they're saying reports are that he could be back for Sunday's game against the Lakers.
He's close, and I would like to see him get out there for at least a couple minutes. Right?
Just stretch it out.
Well, I mean, you don't want to see the first game he's back to be a playoff game, right? They'd like to see him at least get his legs under him. But that's tough, and, you know, if he can't go in the playoffs, UW again for the third straight year, one of the top two players not playing in the playoffs. But then we'd get to see the Zion Williamson show, which I'm just glad that we've gotten a full season out of Zion, right? Like, yeah. Whatever it is. It's not 82 games. But
oh, well, you were watching the game last night, I'm sure, right?
I was not. No,
okay.
I didn't catch that one.
There was a funny moment. Well, it wasn't funny when Zion fell, but then at halftime, the entire crew, including Charles Barkley, they started reenacting the proper way to fall in the NBA so you don't hurt yourself further.
Okay. Yeah. Cool. Good for them. But no, I mean, you're just talking about a guy who, this is the first time that we have seen him get through an entire season and be available for the playoffs, right? Like, the bubble season doesn't really count to me.
Yeah.
Even though before this season, that was his most games played. And that was actually his best season statistically. But, you know, it's just like, until you do it once, it's hard to believe. Like, Joel Embiid, the first 3 years of his career, everyone was like, yeah, he's a bust. He's never going to play a full season. He can't get through however many games. He's not playing the second day of back-to-backs, whatever. And then, you know, he got to a point where it stabilized and suddenly he's an MVP-type player. And so hopefully Zion can build off of this, even if they don't do anything in the playoffs.
Right.
Hopefully he can kind of use this as a springboard to show, okay, this is what it takes to get through an entire season and do what you need to do to make sure that happens again.
Shout out to definitely Zion and everybody that got in his ear about taking conditioning seriously, because that's been major this season, obviously, for him to stay on the court. Also, what has been great to see with him, Zion was asked about what part of his game has he been working on most.
Definitely my defensive intensity. You know, watching Najee, Jose, and Herb do what they do, and Dice, I'm sorry, you know, do what they do. You know, I see that, and it's like, man, I gotta up my defensive intensity as well. So that's definitely been a point of focus for me.
Yeah, seeing him, you know, steal the ball the other night, then slamming it down. People love that, and that's a big part. Obviously, I know a lot of folks want to see Zion work on his mid-jumper too, not just, you know, obviously being able to slam it home. But yeah, being more defensive-minded on this squad has been a huge benefit, obviously. And I don't think it was that bad of his defensive play when he was at Duke.
Well, I was just about to say, we're starting to see the two-way Zion that,
yeah,
that you saw at Duke that made him the no-brainer number one overall pick, because he was that impactful in terms of blocking shots, in terms of stealing the ball, in terms of getting out in transition. And whether it was a fitness thing, whether it was a health thing, you just never really saw that over the first over the first several years of his career. And you have started to see that over the last 10 games that went over the Suns. That was kind of that vintage two-way Zion, where he was going up and blocking shots and just, you know, ping-ponging them off the backboard. He hit those two pull-up jumpers. And yeah, I agree. I think that is one area that if he can just get to a point where you have to defend it. Now, he doesn't have to be great.
Yeah.
But a team has to react to it. Then that makes his life so much easier. I don't think he's ever going to be a three-point sniper. But if you can find a way to score from outside of the paint reasonably well, your life's going to be a lot easier, and then they aren't going to be able to defend you, because the only real way to defend Zion is make a wall and see if he can't run through it. And at times that works.
The criticism for Zion obviously has been a huge talking point this year. We've seen Stephen A. Smith go off, and a lot of other people have piled on some nonsense with Zion. And it's just, he was asked after the game, too, about being mentally tough and making it through this season.
Just stacking my days and, you know, just really trusting the process. I got great teammates, great coaches that all trust me. So when you got a supporting cast like that, it does a lot for your confidence.
I think that's a big thing, too, with this team. You genuinely get a feel that they enjoy being around each other. That's massive.
Yeah. Yeah, and a lot of young players, a lot of guys learning how to be pros. That's why CJ McCollum is such an important piece of this team.
Right, the ringleader.
You know, the Mr. President, you know, the MBPA or whatever it is, Players Association president. But, no, and you're kind of learning how to win. I think that's, you know, in the NBA more so than a lot of other sports, trajectory is a real thing. Right, like football, you can go from worst to first. You can be a team that just gets a lot of bad luck and you fall down, you get a good draft pick, and you get better. In basketball, it's rare to see a team go from being inept and terrible to being a title contender in one season, even two seasons. You got to build to that. And I think this season is a good example of this Pelicans team kind of reaching that next tier, that next step, that next rung on the ladder, so that they can climb up and be one of these contenders. It's not this year. They're not a title contender this year. We can be realistic about it. But they are a threat to win
making
a playoff
strides,
series.
Right.
And until you get to that point, you can't expect the team to be a title contender.
By the way, yesterday, 27 road victories for this team, the most in franchise history now.
There you go. And they're two wins away from 50, which they've only done two other times, I think.
Another pretty impressive feat for a team that gets a lot of criticism, obviously, with head coach Willie Green leading them. They'll be on the road tonight, taking on Golden State, a 9 o'clock tip-off. And you don't need Bally Sports to catch the game. That'll be on Fox 8 this evening for everyone locally to tune into. When we get back from the break, going to check in with Mike Dettillier, go inside the draft with Mike D right after this here on WWL.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
We're back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870. Mike Dettillier along with Steve Geller, Charlie Long in studio, and it's our Inside the NFL Draft segment brought to you by Craig's Electrical and Generator Service. When the lights go off, Craig's comes on. And Charlie, today it's our segment. You know, when you win as many games as Willie Fritz and the Green Wave have won the last 2 years, you got to have players. And you see the list of the players that will either be drafted or as undrafted free agents. It's a fairly long one for Tulane.
It's our Tulane special, Mike, and we're going to start off with the guy that led the offense for the last 2 years, led them to that Cotton Bowl victory, Michael Pratt, the quarterback, who, Mike, we've talked about, there's probably going to be six quarterbacks taken in round one. After that, there's a seventh guy that could go in round two, and that's South Carolina's Spencer Rattler. But then Michael Pratt from Tulane is your eighth guy off the board.
Yeah, I think he'll go. He could go as early as late in round two, but I think he falls into the third round. He's a top 100 pick. Man, what I like about him, he's tough. He's smart. He's accurate. He's become much better in what I call throw the ball in the bucket throws, you know, over a defender's head and right over the top. He's gotten really good at that. His footwork and his mechanics are really strong as a college player. You can tell. Now, he spent 4 years at the Manning Passing Academy, too, mm-hmm. so he got to learn there from the Mannings on technique work. But Michael Pratt, big impact player. And you think about over the last 10 years, has there been a bigger impact player for the course of time than Michael Pratt?
And as to your point about the deep balls, Mike, I think it was the game against South Alabama, their season opener, I want to say, and he threw like three touchdown passes that were 40 yards plus down the field. And as you mentioned, dropping it in the bucket. And the next guy we're going to talk about is one of those guys that like to catch those bucket passes, and Jaquan Jackson, wide receiver, who he got projected kind of late fourth, early fifth round guy in a stacked receiver class.
Yeah, one thing with Jaquan, I got to see him play at Hornville High School in high school. Speed guy, actually played a little quarterback in high school. He's a guy that's versatile. He also can return punts and kicks for you. His biggest asset is speed, his ability to break away from a defensive back downfield and make the catch. I think he's become a much cleaner receiver, catching the ball out front with his hands, not up against his body. And he's a guy that he's built on the small side. He's frail, so he's physically going to have to get stronger, but he's got the ability to hit the big play, over the top throws, and he can take an 8 yard catch and he turns it into 88 yards. That's the type foot speed Jaquan Jackson has, and he's always been a big play athlete from high school with the Green Wave also. And I think in a stacked class, as you brought up, he gets picked in that late fourth, early fifth round area. As far as Green Wave players, I've got more phone calls about him than any other guy.
Really? More than Pratt,
oh, yeah.
Too, huh?
More than Pratt. I think you kind of have a feeling about a certain feeling about Pratt, but Jaquan is a guy that I think he would fit in any system, but his ability to catch the deep ball and get open downfield is something that is his hallmark as a player.
I think that's interesting because when we talked about the stacked receiver class, you could kind of see, and maybe this happens in the first round as well, that they kind of hold off. Teams will hold off on picking receivers unless it's like one of the top guys in the first round, and let them fall into the second and third round because they know that there's going to be talent there because it is such a good class. I think with Jaquan Jackson, as you mentioned, a late fourth to early fifth round pick, for those teams that may want the speedster but don't want to use a first-round pick on like a Xavier Worthy or a Troy Franklin or anything like that early on, Jaquan Jackson would be a really nice option.
Yeah, and again, you know, you know that when you stand up next to him, you know the negative in him, in that he's not a thickly built receiver, and he's had some injuries at yep. Tulane. So that part you have to weigh in. But as far as a big play guy, he is that, and immediately he can help you as a punt kickoff return guy.
Moving on, we got two offensive linemen back-to-back here. Mike, for you, starting with Prince Pines, the left guard.
Yeah, Louisiana kid that then goes to Baylor, Sam Houston State, and ends up, you know, with the Green Wave, two-year starter at the left guard position, power guy, good pass protector. But when they wanted to run the ball, they ran it right behind him.
Yep.
He was the guy. He's the road grader. Now, one of the things he's going to have to work on is some technical skills and how he sets up as a pass blocker. But he's an outstanding run blocker, and he's an improved pass protector. He's going to have to watch his weight and keep that down. But I like what I've seen of his development as an offensive lineman. I think he could go as a seventh-round pick or as a priority free agent.
Following that up here, Mike, we got Sincere Haynesworth, the center, who I remember we talked with Matty Hudak a couple weeks ago about some different pro prospects for this Tulane class. I know you're very, very high on Sincere Haynesworth, not necessarily as potentially a draft pick, maybe an undrafted free agent, but a guy, you know, he doesn't have the size, but he's super tough, super smart, and can really lead the offense from that center position.
Yeah, Matty and I have had a lot of conversations about Sincere. And okay, he's a little over 6 foot tall, but he's so technically strong, learning how to use his arms and his hands and keeping you at bay, his body balance skills, his strength in the lower body, and just how smart he is. He makes all the adjustment calls on the blitzes. He keeps everybody in line. I mean, that's what you want in a center. You want that guy that is going to be the quarterback of your offensive line. With Haynesworth, you don't have to tell him but once. He gets it. He's not a rep guy. He picks it up right off the bat. And again, he's not your typical build as a center, but he is an awfully good football player. And he'll come in as a free agent for somebody. He'll be a really difficult cut. He's that good of a player. I think that, again, he doesn't fit when you put everything in the computer. Just watch him play out on the field.
And then we talk about the offseason events, Mike. The East-West Shrine Bowl, Jarius Monroe, the defensive MVP of that, cornerback from Tulane. You have him also as kind of a seventh-round pick, maybe an undrafted free agent, a guy that could play in the slot.
Yeah, he played his high school football not far from where I live at East St. John. Started out at Nicholls State, played there a few years, and then transferred to Tulane. I had a brother that played at Tulane also. So the one thing Monroe brings to you, his matchup skills. He's over 6 foot tall. He's lengthy as a cover corner. He has average speed, foot speed. And that's probably why you're going to see him sort of dip a little bit in the draft. He may even be a conversion guy. He may even go to free safety in the National Football League. But he can help you on special teams. I think he can play in the slot. His size and his length are certainly his strengths, along with his ability to pick up the ball quickly in flight, and what you brought up in the All-Star game, he was dominant in that football game, just dominant. He found the football quickly in flight, made a play on it, got an interception out of it. So I think Jarius is a guy in round seven or as a priority free agent that'll get selected. If he doesn't, it's all because of one thing, foot speed.
And then another guy that you kind of mentioned also in the defensive backfield, seventh-round pick, maybe a priority undrafted free agent. Cornerback one on this team was Lance Robinson.
Well, with Lance, you know, De La Salle High School starts out at Kansas State and transfers to Tulane. He's the flip of Jarius. He's not a real big guy. Great foot speed.
Yep.
Was part of an outstanding track and field team at De La Salle. Man, he can run. He doesn't have the size or the length that you're looking for, but he's got outstanding foot speed. He's gotten much better in tracking the ball quickly in flight. He's also physically gotten stronger, and it's helped him out in run support. And we've seen in critical times for the Green Wave, him come up, make a big play, and run support.
Mike, their run defense was really, really solid, especially early on in the season. I remember you sharing those stats early on with, you know, the run defense and how many yards per rush they were giving up. It was running like two
yards a rush for like first seven to eight weeks.
It was impressive.
Now, late in the year, wasn't quite that way. They really got kind of gashed a little bit, especially come bowl time, but Lance Robinson's a guy I really like. I thought a lot of him coming out of De La Salle, and I knew he could run, and his ability to plant and drive hard to the football is impressive. So I think he's the flip of Jarius. He's got the foot speed, doesn't quite have the size and the length, but, man, he can play really well. And when you're keeping, you know, five, six corners on a team, he's got an opportunity to play at the NFL level.
And then wrapping things up with one more member of that secondary, a guy that I'm very familiar with, the former Raging Cajun, Cam Podesklo.
Yeah, you know, one thing with Cam, he spent, what, 4 years at in Lafayette with the Raging Cajuns, and then he goes to Tulane, and you see him, he's not a big guy. You know, he's 5'8", about 185 pounds. Man, he's a playmaker, though. He's all over the field. So he was sort of, and I don't like to use that maybe deal with Tyrann Mathieu, but he is sort of their version of Tyrann. They used him all over the board because he could play corner, he could play in the slot, he could play safety, and he is fearless. I mean, he's not a big guy, but he's fearless out on the field, and he's smart that he puts himself in a position to make a play with the football in flight on the deeper patterns, and I think that's a gift. So, you know, I'm a big fan of Cam. I don't think he gets selected only because he's 5'8", but somebody's going to sign him, and he's going to be on a roster, and he's got an opportunity. Again, he does not fit the prototypical size that you're looking for, if it's for the nickel or even at free safety. He's a playmaker, though. Podesklo's a playmaker.
I think, Mike, Cam Podesklo is kind of the definition of you don't draft a guy or take a guy or take a chance on a guy based off of size or maybe necessarily athleticism. Go get a football player. That's what Cam Podesklo is.
I learned this long ago. Jim Finks told me this. He said, Mike, don't fall in love with the athlete.
Measurables.
Fall in love with the football player.
Correct.
When you look at Cam, he's got an opportunity to play at the next level because he's so smart. Great instincts to the football. He's fearless to come up that seam and run support, and he plays the ball well in flight. So I'm a big fan of his, and you know, guy from Houston, Texas, and comes, and he was an immediate impact player for the Raging Cajuns.
Yeah, he was there for a long time with Billy Napier's teams that were so good.
Billy trusted him.
And they were top 25 teams, and a lot of that was because of that defense. And Cam Podesklo, as you mentioned, playmaker on that side of the ball. So once again, recapping here, Mike, the Tulane prospects that you like in this upcoming draft. Michael Pratt is your first guy, a third-round pick, the quarterback, probably the eighth quarterback taken off the board behind the six first-round picks that we expect. You know, going from Caleb Williams, Drake May, Jaden Daniels, Bo Nix, Michael Penix, and J.J. McCarthy. And then in the second round, you kind of expect Spencer Rattler from South Carolina to go off the board. But then that third round, you have Michael Pratt being the eighth quarterback selected in this draft. Moving on, we have Jaquan Jackson, as you mentioned, the speedster wide receiver as a late fourth to fifth round pick. A couple offensive linemen that are pretty interesting, left guard Prince Pines and center Sincere Hainsworth. And then three guys in the secondary that could be either seventh-round picks or undrafted free agents in Jarius Monroe, the slot cornerback, Lance Robinson, the cornerback one on that team, and then Cam Podesklo, the safety.
Yeah, and so this is why you won a bunch of games. You got talent.
Yes, sir.
Okay, there is a connected dots. 1 year, Hoke and I used to talk about this all the time. Find me a really good team, and I'll find you players. And that's true. 1 year, University of California, I think they had nine players picked. I think they won four games. But that is sort of the
that's an outlier.
Way outlier.
Right.
And when you look at how many players are going to get picked from Washington, Michigan, Ohio State for so many years, won't be quite as many this year, but they always had a bunch. Alabama, Georgia. There's a reason they got players. And so why the Green Wave have had so much success under Willie Fritz the last 2 years. Got some players. And that's it for our Inside the NFL Draft segment, brought to you by Craig's Electrical and Generator. When the lights go off, Craig's comes on. We'll be back with more sports talk here on the Big 870 right after this break.
Welcome back into Sports Talk. Like you heard, it's time to get into the Bet 365 triple option. Guys, I'm going to be talking about LSU spring game tomorrow, and year three for Brian Kelly, typically pretty good seasons at Central Michigan. He went 6-5 his second year there. Year three, 9-4, won the MAC Western Division title. At Cincinnati,
the old Chippewas.
Yeah, went 10-3 second season. Next year, 11-3 in the Big East for the Bearcats, and eventually losing to Virginia Tech in the Orange Bowl. Then, when he was at Notre Dame, Irish were 8-5 in Kelly's second season. But year number three, 12-1, but they lost to Bama in the national championship game. Tigers went
Manti Te'o year,
10-3 last year. Year two of Brian Kelly. So, will they be able to rise above that and make the college football playoff in his third season? I think that's a lot of hope, obviously, for the fans here. And you're losing a Heisman Trophy quarterback in Jaden Daniels and some top-tier talent at wide receiver. But the biggest question, obviously, what is his defense going to do this season? They've revamped the whole coaching staff there. Interested to see what happens at the spring game tomorrow. I know it's going to be very vanilla and not a lot of insight into what we're going to see this season. But hopes are high for the Tigers this year, and I don't think that making the college football playoff is definitely out of the question for them.
Well, the defense can't be worse.
No, exactly. Opinion. That's the good news.
I think it's the worst it's ever been. It's 12 teams this year, right? We're expanding this year?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, so, I mean, it would be very disappointing, in my opinion. So you're talking about, like, hey, you know, they could make it. I would say with a 12-team field, if LSU isn't in there, it will be looked at as a very big failure.
Charlie, what you got today?
Guys, I'm going to do a little bit of a pregame before the pregame, which starts in about 12 minutes here. The LSU and Tennessee teams both released their lineup. So I'm going to go over Jared Jones once again after that 4-for-5 night in the midweek against McNeese where he hit 3 home runs and a double, had 6 RBIs. He is staying in that leadoff spot, so that's good news for Tiger fans. Tommy White is batting second, playing third base. Ashton Larson hitting in third and right field. Mac Bingham hitting cleanup in left field. Josh Pearson hitting fifth at second base. Hayden Travinsky at 6th at DH. Brady Neal at 7th catching tonight. Michael Braswell back at shortstop tonight, guys, hitting 8th. Paxton Kling in center field hitting 9th. Gage Jump takes the mound for the Tigers. He's got a 3.98 ERA this season, 2-0 record, and 31 2/3 innings pitch. He's got 38 strikeouts to 11 walks. Now, one thing that stood out to me about Tennessee's side of things, Billy Amick is back. And we talked with Joe Healy last night about him, the star third baseman transfer from Clemson. He's hitting 367 this year with 10 home runs and 90 at-bats, guys. He's been awesome for them. But he's missed the last couple of weeks. He's been out with an injury. He is now back. This is his first game back in a couple of weeks. He's hitting third into the lineup. But another thing that stood out to me, Chris Stamos is pitching tonight for Tennessee. The lefty, it's his first start of the season. So, once again, when Healy was saying, kind of expect a bullpen game in this game one matchup against Gage Jump, that's kind of what you're seeing here. Stamos, as I said, he's a lefty. He's got a 3.46 ERA, 12 strikeouts to 8 walks, and 13 innings pitch, guys.
Have you heard anything of why Coach Jay Johnson decided to do the pitching change today, going with Jump?
He's kind of moved things around a couple times. I think that he wants to have Jump get off to a good start this weekend, and if they can pull out a win, then you have your best pitcher on the mound for tomorrow to try and take this series, your first conference series victory in the first 5 weeks of play. So, yeah, I kind of like it. I think Gage Jump against this Tennessee offense, as I mentioned in the preview throughout the week, there's going to be a lot of runs scored in this series, guys. So, you know, Gage Jump, if he can get you off to a good start, get you 5 innings of work, I think that's pretty solid. You're going against a bullpen game effectively. So the offense has to be able to win this game tonight.
And 3 times a charm. What you got for the triple option, Jeff?
Yeah, triple option. Well, so this week I did my thing where I rounded up a ton of mock drafts because I was bored. I found 40 of them that were legitimate. 40 of them. I went through all 40 of them. And the most common pick for the Saints, believe it or not, was left tackle. 34 of the 40 mock drafts had a left tackle at number 14, or at least in the first round. So it's over 80% of the mock drafts had a left tackle. 18 of them, so nearly half, were Olu Fashanu, the tackle out of Penn State. Very popular pick to the Saints. My issue with it is the logic behind it. And almost everyone that picked Olu Fashanu was like, Trevor Penning's bad. We need to replace him. This guy's the starting left tackle on day one. And I understand why people would go to that, but that's not how the Saints are going to make these picks. Is they're going to pick the guy who they feel fits the best, that they can develop the best. And honestly, I think your need at right tackle is more pressing than your need at left tackle, because I don't know if Ryan Ramczyk can even play. You know Trevor can at least play. I don't know how well he can play, but he can at least play. What if Ryan can't go at all? That's what I'm concerned about. But, you know, what I really want to talk about is, so everyone's going to be like, hey, if they take a left tackle, it's going to be boring, right? And then sometimes boring picks are the right picks, right? So if you're bored at the end of the draft, a lot of times it means you had a good draft because you picked the important players. But there is one player in this draft that the Saints could pick that would actually get people excited. And, you know, getting people excited isn't always a winning scenario. The Giants got people excited when they drafted Saquon Barkley at number two. It was still a horrible pick. They should have never made it. He was great. The team was bad. But people lined up and bought jerseys and got excited and went and, you know, sat there and watched practice. I'm like, oh, yeah, this guy. Saquads, you know, Quadzilla. If the Saints want to get people excited, which, again, is not the goal of the draft. The goal of the draft is to add good players. But if they want to get people excited, they're going to take Brock Bowers at number 14. Because there is no player other than maybe a massive trade-up to go get one of these top quarterbacks that the Saints could select that would actually get people out there buying jerseys and getting pumped up just to see this guy run around.
Right.
And, I mean, when's the last draft pick they made that was actually, like, super exciting, right, in the first round? It's tough because they are a team that likes to build through the lines, and no one's ever going to run out and buy a Trevor Penning jersey on day one.
I guess you could say Chris Olave. Yeah, exactly. I was going to say Olave.
Yeah, and so, yeah, if do you want to go do that again? Because I don't know. I think it'd be kind of fun, personally.
That's a wrap on Triple Option. Taking a break, coming back one more segment here on WWL before we head to pregame coverage, LSU baseball at Tennessee, coming up right after this on WWL. Closing down shop here on Sports Talk, heading into pregame coverage, LSU baseball at Tennessee. Hopefully the Tigers can get a SEC series victory this weekend. Tonight, though, gentlemen, also worried about the Pellies. Can they take on the Golden State Warriors and achieve a victory back-to-back nights on the road here?
Bow down.
A win?
That's the thing.
And the Suns loss? They're at the sixth seed.
Hey.
Will it happen?
No.
No.
I don't think so. I think they lose. This is the game the Pelicans lose. They usually have, like, programmed losses. I'm not going to stay up late enough to watch it because I'm old.
Charlie, how you feeling?
They're getting it. Okay. They're getting it, I believe. Well, just go Sacramento. Go Sacramento. That's all we need. Even if they lose, they succeed still alive.
Have a great weekend, everybody. Hope you also enjoy French Quarter Fest. We'll be back on Monday.
Peace.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.